Guys, this is unbelievable. We have a guest today. Yes, somebody has agreed to come on. And not only that, you guys don't have to listen to me talking to a wall for an hour. I don't know why you come back. I'm grateful. Don't get me wrong. But I don't understand. Now, just very briefly for my industrial people, because this is very, very important to me. KMFDM just put out the most diabolical album that I have ever heard in my life. I was at the gym, and excuse my French, I almost shit myself. I have never had a time where I play a new album and the first three songs are just banger after banger after banger. Like, Sasha and Lucia, please step on my neck. It's over. So I just need my industrial fans to know, go listen to that album. It's Let Go by KMFDM. It's just so good. It's so good. Like, the second track, when Push comes on, there's like this riff that comes in the beginning. And I was like, you can't do this. They can't do this. Who wrote this riff? I replayed it so many times. It's insane. Bruce, welcome to the show.
I didn't know you were an industrial fan.
I'm a massive industrial fan.
I'm not a
fan.
Huge fan, but obviously I know KMFDM.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Dude, so,
yeah.
I love, I'm like a psycho industrial fan. I was telling them a couple of weeks ago, I went to the Streamer Awards, and like, yeah. Don't get me wrong, it was sick, love it, great time with my coworkers, but I was so ready to get to the goth bar afterwards.
Was there a goth bar? Oh,
no, I left like the after party, and I was like, bye, guys. Bye.
Why don't you just go there all the time? I love the goth bar.
I should more, but I just like, I felt like after being at the awards, I needed to go be with my people.
I understand.
And then I ended up like rolling my ankle on the floor. Like, I think I rolled my ankle to Combi Christ, which I love.
You would live an amazing life. I'll be honest with you.
I don't know that. Bruce, you know what's so funny? We've never talked off camera.
It's true.
Until like a couple minutes ago.
No, it's true. And it's strange because I think you and I have sort of crossed paths a lot.
Yeah.
And we're always like, whenever we see each other off camera, by the way, which is like 30 seconds at a convention, we're always like, we should actually sit down and like talk about other shit that's not on camera.
I know.
Just like randomly like relate. Because I feel like you and I have had very similar experiences across all of our industries.
Maybe. Well, yeah. I'm curious what you have to say about kind of your experience, because we touched on it a second ago,
yeah,
off camera, guys. And I was like, wait, ours is way different. But mm-hmm. Reminder, so a couple days ago, something happened with Rooster Teeth.
That's right. Warner Brothers shut it down.
I'm shocked.
I mean, I think it's interesting. Like, if you were following Rooster Teeth, obviously I worked there for almost 5 years. And if you were following it, I wasn't shocked. People were kind of expecting it was going to happen. It's still a bummer. Like, it's still one of those things where you're just like, oh, man. Because you know why it happened. And
why though?
And just because they were saying, I mean, they've been saying that that Rooster Teeth has not been profitable for a long time. And that's true in the sense that, you know, I don't know because I don't work there. But that's what I've heard. So I don't actually know for sure. Regardless, Warner Brothers is cutting everything, right? They just canned Batgirl and stuff like that. So they're
Batgirl was $90 million.
Right, yeah.
I was like, no way.
So they're just trying to get rid of everything because they're overspending and they need to save money.
God, overspending $90 million.
Like, well, I'm not. What are they considered, a tax write off? Right. So
yeah.
It's like $30 million tax write off. Whatever. They had the misfortune of being part of Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And if Rooster Teeth, I think, had stayed independent, then it probably would still be around and we'd probably still be going and, you know, whatever. But I mean, like, that's what happens. Things get acquired and then they either like sort of explode or they shutter. And most of the time they shutter. Usually they just kind of go away.
You know, it's so interesting to me that they're saying it's not profitable because so this is news to me.
Yeah.
I just found out a couple like months ago that there are various YouTubers that some people are making like $1 to $5 million a month.
You mean like on AdRev?
Individual like YouTubers that are syndicating their content properly and doing deals and stuff like that. Oh, yeah.
Like,
Bruce, I almost threw up.
But I would assume they're big YouTubers.
Yeah, pretty big. But like, okay. I'm saying like there's some people that are just getting like their videos maybe get 1 million views like per hit or something like that. And they're still syndicating that way. And so I'm like, how did Rooster Teeth hire all these people, but they're not... You know, if that type of money is possible,
right,
if people are just printing money on YouTube, which, by the way, can I just say, I want to...
Printing money. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to... how do I say this? I want to throw up when I found that out. Because, like, my channel, on my main channel, I feel like it does pretty well. But
it does,
like,
yeah.
I'm not, like, doing this whole business thing the way other people are, apparently.
Well, so I would love to see those numbers, regardless. Because I'm very, very interested and curious.
Yeah,
But also, you hit on something very important, which is, they're big YouTubers, and they probably have a staff of, what, five
yes.
people, six people?
Yes, yes, yes.
Right? So then they're like slowly scaling up, and somebody found out about this whatever syndication thing that makes them $1 million a month.
Yeah.
I'm skeptical. Regardless, either way, they found that out and they sort of scaled up to meet those needs.
Mm.
And they continued to make a profit. They were always making a profit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what's weird about companies
mm.
is that almost all of the companies that I've worked for are that way, which is like, we'll make the content and then the advertisers will come. And I'm always like,
yeah,
what? No, that is not the way this works. Like,
you really?
Have to, yeah, like, yeah, it's the weirdest thing. It's like, we'll hire 30 people to make a show and then we'll make the show. And I promise you, the show will be a great show. And whether or not, who knows? That's whatever, it's subjective. But it'll be a great show and we'll be able to sell ads on it. I'm always like, no, this is not the way to do this. Like, you make a show for the, you know, it's called minimum viable product. Mm. You make the show with the smallest amount of people for the smallest amount of money.
Yeah.
And then scale up as it gets more popular.
Yes. No, 100%.
It's very
Wait,
strange.
That's no offense, but you know what's so funny? Digital is so often overstaffed out of nowhere. And I don't know
I don't get it.
Where it happens. Yeah. Like, there. Wow, I didn't expect us to go off into this land, but I'm so fascinated.
Well, the questions you asked me at the beginning off camera, again, that's what happened. Like, yeah. that's what happens with all of these things is that, I mean, like, G4 widely public about this. I know, and by the way, lots of amazing friends at G4, and yeah. I love G4, and what yeah. they were making was great. But when I was listening to people talk about that they were going to start G4 again, they were like, we're going to spend $20 million on a building. And I was like...
Dude.
I was like, what? No, yeah. don't do that.
No.
I was like, no. Yeah, like stream on Twitch for like a year first. Like, you know, like
do something. And also it's interesting because you probably know this too. Twitch culture is so different. Like Twitch thinks is like cringe or what they will and won't watch
yeah.
is so different. Like, you cannot just spend $1 million on a 30 episode run and then Twitch people are going to say, oh my God, look at this high production thing.
No.
I can't wait to watch this. No, like
yeah.
I've been a Twitch streamer for 9 years
yeah.
and a Twitch watcher. We like to eat garbage.
That's right.
We're
yeah.
little raccoons in the garbage can.
That's like YouTube. Yeah, the same way.
We're yeah, little yeah. dumpster divers. Yeah, that's yeah, what yeah. we're doing. And so I yeah. just, yeah, I was bummed about like Crown and G4 or something because
yeah.
to me, those are the closest bridge for us between like digital and traditional. And so I want them to win.
Of
so
course.
More people take us on the digital side more
Always.
Seriously.
Yeah. No, I mean, again, so if anybody doesn't know where I came from, I worked at the original G4 way back.
I didn't
so,
know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I worked there from 2004 to 2011. Kind of, I got laid off a couple of times in between, but I still worked at G4. And then moved to Machinima, and then moved to Rooster Teeth, and then went independent after all that.
Mm.
And all of those companies were the same. It was like somebody would front a bunch of money, and then they'd be like, well, don't worry, the advertisers will come. And I was always like, what? And we
yeah.
knew this at the old G4. We were like, no, this is not the way this works. Like, you have to build an audience. And if you're building an audience on... an unprofitable venture, then you've got maybe a year. You've
yeah.
got maybe a year before whoever is spending the money comes to you and goes, where's our money?
You know, and
so,
this might be a like weird, this is how I feel. A lot of times when you start a project, you know, we put a lot of heart into it. I'm assuming you do a lot of like executive production too, right?
I mean, I'd love to do it. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah,
when like, I can't, but again, when the money is there,
right?
When I know I can get a return.
Well, whenever I create a show, I start with the show has to have a soul. It has to have a spirit.
Oh, always.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like that's so important to me. And when I work on my shows, I literally put my blood, sweat, and tears into
Absolutely,
it, and I
yeah.
love it.
Yeah.
But then sometimes. When you pass it off to a production company, and maybe that production company has 30 people, now this is just a job for somebody.
That's correct.
And they're filling in the blanks.
That's right.
And sometimes the shows lose its soul, and the audience feels that.
Absolutely.
And yes. I like it's one thing I think that holds me back in business because I need to be able to relinquish more of my shows.
Like delegate, sure. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I run like 5 different shows, and I basically write all of my shows. It's a nightmare, Bruce.
This is gonna be really bad because I'm reinforcing bad habits for you.
Yeah.
I don't think you should do that. I think you should continue with the passion, and I think you should continue actually investing yourself into that show because you're right. The more that you delegate, like, again, you can delegate the stuff that doesn't require the passion and the vision.
Mm-hmm.
But if you delegate the passion and the vision, you've got to find people that are like-minded.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that's
yes.
it. It's done. I have a really funny story about this. So a long time ago, again, original G4, there was a show called Filter.
Mm-hmm.
nobody watched Filter, but I worked on it. And I enjoyed the show. And obviously the people that worked on the show were all pretty much nerds. We loved nerd culture. However, there were a few producers on that show that I remember talking to them and being like, hey, like, where did you come from? They're like, oh, I came from reality or whatever. I came from, you know, this television show or this television show. And I was always like, oh, do you like video? Do you like video games? And they're like, not really. I'm just here to, you know, help write the show and like punch up some scripts or whatever. And I was And Filter was canceled within a year or whatever it was.
Oh,
so I was
my
like,
God.
Because again, people were writing jokes about video games that had no idea what they were writing about. So I was like, of course this is never going to work.
And a studio will let that happen so fast.
Yeah.
They don't care because they're all worried about the numbers and stuff. My priority first is always connecting with the audience somehow.
That's exactly right.
Because I feel like you either have to get somebody that's going to produce your shows. For you guys that watch these type of shows, if you're watching something and it's great for a while and then suddenly just, they probably hired on producers that don't care as much about the show. And they're just, it sucks to say, but I think it's just true. Yeah. And it just becomes a job to them. And like, you know, I get it. I don't even know what I was about to say.
No, but I mean, like, this is a good point because there's a few visionaries across like movies and television and whatever else. And a few of them I can point to are Denis Villeneuve, obviously Dune 2 and Dune.
Oh, yeah.
Like this guy, he helps write the script. He helps produce the movie. He directs the movie. He's in it from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And he's in it till the very, very end. Mm-hmm. Nolan, Christopher Nolan's the same way. It doesn't matter if you don't like the movies or whatever. That's, again, subjective.
Right.
But they have a vision for what they're doing, and they're sticking through it the entire time.
The art never gets lost. They lead with the art, and they make sure the art goes through every step of the way.
Right.
Sometimes people let it go business first. Like, it goes from art first to business first.
By the way, sometimes that works. Unfortunately, sometimes that works. I don't think as often.
I feel like it works if you're Mr. Beastifying it and you're like, we gotta look at the numbers, we gotta look at the retention.
Sure, sure, yeah. I mean, and like, but Mr. Beast is one of the most passionate creators that I know.
It's true.
His
art to me is analytics. Yeah. I think everyone has their own. I talk about this all the time. I'm really annoying about it.
No, but you're right.
Yeah.
You're totally, and like, I've told many stories about like listening to Mr. Beast speak at a YouTube thing or whatever, and he gives a like, it was one of those things where like, I remember people would be like, oh, how long should we focus on a thumbnail for YouTube videos when we were making them? And I was always like, I don't know. I mean, like, you know, we got to go through rounds of notes and make sure it looks good and all this other stuff. And Mr. Beast was like, we usually spend about 8 hours on a thumbnail, one thumbnail. And I was like, holy hell. Like, I never would have guessed 8 hours on a thumbnail, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
That's how he's getting people to watch.
Yeah.
Is like, if they don't know Mr. Beast, then they see this thumbnail and like, I spent, you know, whatever, 2 days in a prison or whatever. You know, like, if his thumbnail is good and the title is good, then they're going to go watch the video. It doesn't matter if Mr. Beast is in it or not.
Dude, do you know what thumbnail guy culture is?
No, what's that?
It's so funny.
Wait, what's
Bruce?
That? No.
So
huh?
We have a guy that works on our team sometimes, and he's great. He's a thumbnail guy.
All right.
If you look at his Twitter, he has like all these other thumbnail guy friends, and they like all work for the big creators like Mr. Beast, KSI,
awesome.
All this.
Okay.
And like, they'll show their before and afters with their thumbnails.
Oh,
and
that's
then
so cool.
They comment on each other's, like literally just stroking each other.
Dude, that's so
like,
cool.
They're like, dude, this is amazing, blah, blah, blah. Like, thumbnail guy culture on Twitter is hilarious, but they're really talented.
Yeah, they're passionate,
yes,
by the way, about their art.
They're very passionate. Yeah. And like, I've heard that those thumbnails can get up to like $5,000, like once you're getting through the revisions.
Oh, I'm sure
and,
of it. Yeah.
And I mean, to them, the thumbnail, it's a marketing tool, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
so
it's the first marketing tool anyone sees.
Yeah.
So of course, yeah. I mean, then again, this is just YouTube culture. I'm not talking about movies or television. That's a little different.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like that's, in my opinion, that's the artist showing off their passion.
Right.
Is that I don't, like you said, analytics is their passion, or like getting people into the video is their passion, which is super cool.
Yeah.
I love all of that. I don't think that there, I don't think there's any detraction from the fact that you want people to watch your content. You know, like, doesn't.
Of course.
So what?
Bruce, did you know that I was ignored as a child? So my.
I didn't know that. No.
My special talent is getting attention.
All
so
right.
That turned into me being a marketer.
Oh, I didn't know that. All right.
So if you were ignored as a child, you can become a marketer. You've got it in you.
So I wasn't ignored as a child. My parents were actually pretty great. I have a lot to say about that. My parents are great. But you're an extrovert like I am.
Am I?
I would assume so. Or maybe not.
I think as I get older.
Are you more an introvert?
I think I'm, you know what? I have extrovert energy, but I have a little social phobia. I used to call it social anxiety, but I almost had like a breakdown in Japan when there was a bunch of people around. So I was like, this may be a phobia.
No, absolutely. And well, then I apologize for presuming that you are an extrovert.
Oh my God, stop. You're too nice.
Because I'm the opposite. I'm the type of person who loves being around people, loves talking. Like if there's a crowd of people or whatever, I'm like, yeah, great.
So I love that you apologize for that though. That's very sweet. Like you could literally reach across the table and slap me and the podcast would keep going.
No, I'm not
going
to do that.
Don't...
No. No,
okay.
Of course
not. What were
you going to
say?
We were just talking about being an extrovert, introvert. You were talking about that sort of thing. I don't know what we're talking about, Buzz.
That's okay. That's exactly what happens here.
Yeah, this is okay.
You know what? I'm curious. When were you at Rooster Teeth last? How long has it been?
It's been almost 5 years. I left at the end, September of 2019 is when I left.
Hmm.
So right before the pandemic started.
Really?
Yeah. And it was like one of those things where like I could not have gotten luckier in terms of moving to Twitch full time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because that's when I had been streaming on Twitch for a couple of years at that point, but I hadn't really made it my career. And so when I left in 2019, I was like, well, I'll try it and see what happened. Because Twitch was coming up. I think people were sort of popping off a little bit, but it was pretty standard. Everyone's like, this is something that I'm really curious to ask you, actually. I have, obviously without naming names, I've had so many content creators over the years be like, why are you going to Twitch? Like, Twitch is so like Twitch is just you thanking subscribers.
Mm.
That's all it is. Just you talking to people. It's not
even
content.
God.
And I'm always like, and like this is coming from like YouTube content creators.
That sounds like YouTube. That sounds like people that film offline that are scared to convert to live, so they want to talk on it. That's the vibe I get.
That makes total sense.
Yes.
Because it's. I don't know if you've ever gotten that. Has anybody ever come to you and been like, Twitch is trash. Why are you there?
I was a Twitch streamer before I started. So Smosh actually found me on Twitch.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All right.
So I was a Twitch streamer before. And yeah, there was definitely that energy, but I never cared. I like
I don't care.
Live.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's a fascinating skill set because you've been doing it for like 5 or 6 years now.
Twitch streaming almost 7. Yeah.
Yeah. So. I'm going on like 10 years on Twitch. And yeah. I realized being able to talk in a live format is a skill that a lot of people either don't have or they haven't built on yet. And also, I do true crime on Twitch, right?
I do, yeah. I watched it.
Dude, I realized I picked the hardest job in the world because I'm talking live on a gaming platform about very serious subjects.
That's right, yeah.
And like,
but people love it.
And I mean, I never thought about it before because I just say what I'm thinking or how I feel, but like, I try to support other people that do true crime on Twitch.
Of course, yeah.
Like I'm like, yes, true crime economy. Like, let's go.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I find some people just say crazy shit when they're doing true crime.
I would imagine
they really like. I'm like, wait, you can't say that.
Well, yeah, because that's probably like maybe the inner, you know, who knows what coming out.
You know what the first thing people say that you're not supposed to say when you're doing true crime content. They start saying how the person should have lived or how the killer could have done X, Y, and Z. And I
okay. They could have gotten away with it this way.
Yeah. And I'm like, and like, these are people that, and like, obviously, and look, let me just say, like, there's a lot of different people that do true crime on Twitch. Love support.
Sure.
I'm just saying these are like a few things I've seen over the years and I'll try to like support this person at first. And I'm like, wait, don't say that.
Yeah.
So
good for you.
As I was saying, speaking live is kind of a skill, and especially for, I think, YouTubers that filmed offline for 10 years, because a lot of people started in like 2010.
Yeah, absolutely.
They've been doing, like, when did you start YouTube?
I mean, YouTube for me was 2011. But I mean, like, before that, I'd been producing television that was live television. So it was kind of the same with you, which was like, I knew the way it should have played out. So if things were said or done on live television, you couldn't take it back.
Exactly.
It was done. So.
And some people film offline, and some people are real pieces of shit and they're offline filming too.
Sure.
And they just can't do it live. So yeah, of course they're going to tell you, why are you going over there?
It was so weird. It's just weird to be, again, it's like one of those things where it's like, respect all artists for me. Like, it's like, why would you frown on this? Just go do it. Or don't. And be like, no, it's cool. Like, it's not for me. But like, it's all good. Like, whatever they do there's always a skill or multiple skills involved with every art.
Exactly.
I'm not going to go shit on somebody who's like, you know, draws with colored pencils. Like, yeah. Like, no, that's what they do, and they do it really well. So, like, yeah. Well, that's a skill I don't have.
If somebody's making comments on that, I think it comes from a place of there's some kind of energy, something's charged there. They're feeling something on their end, because there's no reason to say that. It's like, yeah. Oh, no. Bruce, you're going to take your impressive resume from TV to digital from the last 15 years and then go create another silo for yourself where you make money and you can turn it on whenever you want.
Yeah.
What a horrible idea, Bruce.
It's like, very weird. It's one of those things where maybe if they it's interesting you say make money, because people, I don't think they're not like, well, making money is not an art. The art is the art, and then making money is part of it. And yes and no. For as long as I've been, you know, whatever, consuming art, making art, 20 years probably, maybe longer, I always thought the hardest thing to do was make something for everyone, but that was also true to what you do.
Yes. I think that. What do you think?
It's impossible. And it's also like, so, and I think it's also maybe in today's weird capitalism, you know, supported art economy, the hardest thing that you can do ever. And the reason I say that is because, like, pop music. People are always like, pop music, it's all the same. It all sounds the same. And I'm always like, I mean, I guess it does. Like, can you do it? Is it that easy?
Yeah.
Because clearly, it's just a recreation of everything else, right? It's just over and over the same thing. So go do it. And everyone's like, well, I mean, no, I need a team of people, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that's not how every artist started.
Yeah.
Not every pop artist started with 40 people around them to write their songs for that. Not at all the way any artist.
It starts with the art. And my people have heard me say this all the time, but like, my opinion is like, everyone has an art. I think it comes from just your early life experiences, yeah, like where you are now. And then you have a unique lens and you are attracted to certain things, and then you put your experience on that thing.
That's right.
And that becomes your art.
That's
right.
Correct. That's it.
Yeah. And I think that's so beautiful. I love when people find their art. I love when they find confidence in their art, and yeah, I love when they explore it and just go full steam ahead.
Me too.
And I think that the people that might judge for Twitch or judge for other things, they haven't found their art. They want, some people, they want fame and notoriety without
the work or giving
yeah, anything back to the people. I think any media product that we put out, it must give back to other people in some way.
Yes.
And yeah, and if somebody goes into something with the mindset of, I'm gonna be famous, this is perfect, I'm gonna be famous, if you're not thinking about the audience that you're giving back to, you're gonna fail. Like,
that's true. Like, that's absolutely true.
So yeah, and like, so people that are, I feel like people that are just very like self-centered and like into themselves, and they just want this for them, they might have a few blow-ups. They might have a few good moments.
Of course, yeah.
But ultimately, it's going to fail, right? Well, like, it's
because you have to serve the audience.
Yes.
Like, it's very, and again, look, if you don't want to, the thing I always say about art is, if you don't want to serve the audience, if you're not worried about serving the audience, you want to make the art for you, then make the art.
Yeah.
Like, if you made a video or if you made a painting or whatever, great.
Yeah.
Put it up in your house. You know, like, and that's the thing, is that there's an interesting disconnect between people that are like, whatever I make is whatever I make, and if it has an audience, great. And that's not true.
Yeah.
Because if you're putting it out to an audience, then that means you're looking for someone to look at it.
Yeah.
So don't do that.
I hate that.
Instead, just draw a picture and put it up in your house and be like, look what I made.
I told you Smosh found me from Twitch, and I was actually hired to be their live producer, which was hilarious because I had no experience producing.
Right, because you've been streaming, but you were only producing yourself, basically.
Yeah,
right?
Dude. I was just like playing League of Legends for 12 hours, playing Udyr, and like screaming. Like, that was all I was doing. Yeah. And you want to know how they found me? Bruce, this is so funny. So the guy that was casting at Smosh, I love him. I literally just talked to him a couple months ago. I was still close with him.
Yeah.
He was like a Hollywood casting person. And so Smosh was part of Defy Media. You heard about the whole Defy Media shutdown.
Of course,
legendary, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they had done the whole Hollywood expansion. They wanted to be bought. I don't know if you know this. I think I do.
Yeah, yeah.
They had an office in Beverly Hills because the address was supposed to say, we're making money.
Sure, whatever.
So super.
Yes, I know those all these stories from Machinima, by the way.
Yeah, same the deal. Tactics. Yeah. And then we saw it happen. But yeah, so this guy, he was like a Hollywood kind of producer. And he was told, hey, we need you to go find some gamers to join Smosh Games.
Sure.
And so what he did was he went to the TwitchCon website for a giant list of all the gamers that will be there. And he just started clicking through the names, A through Z.
Okay.
And I was Bose.
You were B.
Yeah, I was in the B's. And he just started clicking through the streams, and nobody was live, but then he got to mine, and I was live.
Because you stream for 12 hours a day.
That's right. That's right. I was there. I was just hunched over my computer. And, like, dude, this is, like, actually a funny story. At the time, I had, because, you know, Twitch is crazy. You'll get a fun little stalker. I had this stalker that was, like, he had gotten my mom's information. He was, like, calling her job, like, begging her to get me to talk to them. Like, it was crazy. And I was dealing with that, and this person had emailed me, and they were like, hey, you know, I'm casting for this thing in Los Angeles for gaming. Are you interested? And I thought it was the stalker person.
Oh,
so I didn't.
So you're like, no.
I was like, nice try. Yeah. Like, you know, like, didn't respond. And then on this day, I'm streaming. So on his end, he's clicking through the TwitchCon thing, comes to my thing. Well, I think he emailed me. And then he came back into my stream a few days later, and he made a Twitch account. And he was like, hey, I have been trying to contact you. I am from Los Angeles. Da 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 da. Are you interested? Cool. And I literally sent a chat, and I was like, yeah, email me, buddy. He was like, I already have. And I just, like, I don't think this is true. But anyways, I go back and I decide to answer the email. And he asked me for my phone number. And I was like,
oh, no,
he's
that's,
trying
yeah,
to
yeah,
get
that's,
me.
That, that's weird, yeah.
I don't know what happened. But basically, I did. I gave him the number. And he called me from a Beverly Hills number. And I was like, it said Beverly Hills, California.
And, like, oh.
And I'm in Virginia at the time, Bruce.
Yeah, okay, all right,
and
right,
I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, hello. And he's like, hey, I'm casting you for this project. Basically it's getting to gaming. You'll be paid a salary. You know, you'll have to game 5 days a week in the office, but
yeah,
you will have to move to Los Angeles. And he's like, would you be willing to move to Los Angeles? And I was like, send me the document.
Were you really like ready to just go?
Okay, yeah, right, I did. Right. Bruce, I had nothing to live for. I was living at my mom's house,
yeah,
literally
yeah,
just playing League of Legends for 12 hours a day.
All right.
Like, you want to give me salary to go play video games? Absolutely. So what they actually wanted, sorry, this is so long. What they actually wanted was a live producer for Smosh Game.
Oh, and that wasn't you.
That was me.
But what I'm saying is, like, you were not ready for that.
No, yeah, it was not.
But you probably learned a ton.
Dude, I had to learn so fast. So that was my first thing with production. And the hardest part of my job was coming into this new job and having this cast, Smosh Games. I love them to death. In fact, I'm actually filming with them. I'm doing another podcast with them right after this.
Oh, cool.
Which is
right
so
on.
Funny. Huh. But they had been doing this for a while, and they were pretty big. Like, they had, like, you know, 500,000
yeah,
followers,
they were. Yeah, yeah.
7 million subscribers on, you know, YouTube. And so they didn't have egos, but they knew what they were doing.
Of course.
And I was new. And my job was to tell them what to do on these live streams.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
And so I couldn't get them to do anything.
Of course not. Yeah.
One, I didn't know what I was doing. And then two, they were too cool for me. And
right,
and now we've got these 4K cameras on live and 10,000 viewers. And I'm like, welcome to Smosh Games Live. And nobody's with me. So what I had to start doing, Bruce, was I had to start, one, producing the streams. My goal was to get as many viewers as possible,
okay,
so that everyone wanted to be on that. So I had a couple tactics.
Of course.
And then two, I had to make the games that we were playing on stream so fun that everybody wanted to play. I had to create FOMO. And I'm like 25 years old,
right,
okay? I had to create FOMO to make people, you know, play the games.
Yeah.
And it was, I don't know why I just told you all this.
Because it's funny. You're describing what happened to me at G4.
Because
this is what happened to G4. So being a producer, if you don't know what a producer is, like,
can I just say?
Yeah.
This is so fun.
Oh, good.
I didn't know what we were going to talk about, but I'm having so much fun.
Again, I assumed that, I think across you and I, all the industry experience that we've got, we could talk for hours and hours and hours about it. And I knew it'd be fun because you're the best.
Factor makes ready-to-eat meals that get delivered directly to your door. Do you know what that means? You're not cooking today. You're not cleaning today. And you know what else? You're not worrying today. So tell your husband to shut up and eat a peanut butter Buddha bowl, because I had one the other day and it was fire. Okay? You guys know I love Factor. I've been partnered with them for a couple years. Anytime they come by, I say, Yes, send me a box. We will talk about it because I want you guys to have a stress-free week. Now, if you've tried Factor before, listen, I already know you were surprised that the meals were that good. When they do that cheesy chicken and then they do that kind of cauliflower mash, you're like, how is this healthy but so good? I know, it's unbelievable. And then what do you have to clean? The fork. And you don't have to. You can get a plastic one, but maybe don't do that. Save the environment. But you can get your box of Factor with my code IGOTNOTHING50 and get yourself a little discount. Guess what the discount is? 50% off. So go to factormeals.com/IGOTNOTHING50. Use my code, get yourself a little discount, and have an easy week. You're welcome.
What a producer is, it's just connective tissue. So it's like somebody needs to go, well, we need to play video game, this video game, stream it live today because it's popping off. Let's say it's Helldivers. Helldivers is popping off. So we need to figure out how to get 4 Smosh talent to play Helldivers live. That's a lot of work. I mean, yes. You have to put together a bunch of cameras, make sure all the cameras can be streamed to Twitch. There's a switcher that you can make sure you can see each other's camera. Everyone's got to be having fun.
Yep.
How long are we going to do it for? 4 hours. How are they going to interact with chat? Are they going to, like, there's all these questions you got to answer. That's what being a producer is. So producer on television, same way.
Yeah.
Same thing. It was live television. It's called Attack of the Show. Attack of the Show.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the show I worked on for years. And when I got hired, I hadn't done live. I had produced television, but it was all recorded. So there was nothing really at stake. It was like if something screwed up, everybody would, you'd stop and then, you know, start again. Live television is different. And I remember for the first like 3 or 4 months of me producing for Attack of the Show, I produced gadget reviews.
Mm.
So cameras, televisions, phones.
That's cool.
It was awesome, yeah. But holy hell, is it fucking boring for television. Like that's not generally very good television,
because right.
Usually it's a let's say reviewing a TV, how am I going to communicate this TV looks good while someone's watching on TV?
Wait, I have a question. Why do you think that works so well on YouTube but works poorly on TV?
Well, put it this way, I got better at it.
Okay.
I got better at it because as time went on, I was like, well, how can I tell people? Because how can I tell people that a television looks good by just showing it to them?
Mm.
And there are lots of ways to do it. I learned over the course of a few years, but it took me 3 or 4 months to really understand what made good television.
Mm.
And again, I'm having to tell Kevin Pereira, Olivia Munn, like people like that. Like here's what, I'm a 25-year-old kid who's like just reviewing TVs and being like, oh, this is what you got to say. And they have to be very specific, by the way, because they get picked apart otherwise.
Yes.
It's a gadget review.
Yes.
So it took me a few months to get there. And that's the way I felt about it, too.
Where
like, I'd walk in there and tell camera people that have been working in the industry for 20 years, tell the talent that it clearly is hosting the show and having a great time. And I can't the vibe. Like there's a lot of stuff there.
It's
really weird.
It's a great experience in the sense of like, damn, we did that. Like that's like actually pretty sick to be able to put that together. And like you have to walk in confidently.
Yeah.
When
you have to be overconfident.
Yes.
And that's the sad part.
Yeah.
Is you have to be overconfident and you are under knowledgeable.
Yeah.
So for a while I I'm just kind of flying by the seat of my pants, you know, like hoping that what I was doing was correct. And I remember there was one specific day that it finally clicked. Like I was reviewing a cell phone, and each time, like basically everything I said in this review, I had a piece of B-roll to go along with it. And this is why it works.
Yeah.
Is because anytime you said the keyboard, cause this was a phone with a keyboard. If the keyboard was good, I had to show thumbs typing on it, not overlapping on the keys.
Hmm.
And if I had to talk about how the touchscreen was good or bad, I had to show someone's finger. It all sounds very obvious.
Yeah.
But it truly is not, because you don't ever know what your talent's going to say. So if your talent doesn't stick to the script and they start saying shit that you don't have B-roll for, it's a bad review.
Right.
So they have to stick to the script.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it works on YouTube, because those people are professionals. Marques Brownlee, that guy.
Insane.
He's a professional. But again, he knows anything he says about a gadget has to have video covering it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what and again, it sounds really obvious, but it took me a very long time to understand how to do it in the live television format.
Yeah, no, and this stuff, it's not obvious. Like the ways in which you have to like capture and retain attention while not in a gross way, you know?
No, no, yeah, like, just in a normal way.
Yeah, in a normal way. Like, it's not easy, and it's definitely not easy to learn when you're 25 and navigating, like, just all the...
It's weird.
It's so weird. I think back to, like, my younger self, because I'm 32 now, so this is, like, 7 years ago. I think back to myself, like, 25 in the studio, like, being in the makeup room by myself, like, putting on my last eyeliner wing, like... Okay, we gotta get in there, and I gotta tell Mari where she needs to be. Right. Mari, that's been doing this for 10 years.
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
And Mari's like a dear, dear friend of mine now. But like when I first got in there, I was scared.
Of course.
I was like, she's hot and famous. Like I can't tell her what to do. I go in there. Hey guys, so we got another episode today. I gotta act like disinterested and like I've just got it all under control.
Of course,
like.
Yeah.
Jovan, let me get you over here in this seat, and Lasercorn, we're going to have you in for the second half, so if you just want to go back to your computer for a little bit, and I'm over here like...
You're panicking inside, yeah. Nice job, by the way. Good job on keeping it together.
I didn't.
Outwardly. Oh, well, it sounds like externally you probably had it together, and everyone's like, wow, look at those.
What I ended up producing was good, and like that was my first show with them, and then I actually went on to create a couple more series that I was like super proud of. I learned how to produce, and you know, I think also... One thing that I think a lot of content creators unfortunately miss out on is like, okay, bro, you know how when somebody like finally quits their job and they post the big tweet, like I'm a full-time streamer now, I finally quit. Mm-hmm. It's a really big moment. And I think a lot of people see that and they say, wow, I can't wait until I can quit my full-time. And like, you know.
You mean like a full-time content creator job, or full-time any job?
Like somebody working a regular, like a normal job.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I was working at a restaurant before I went full-time on Twitch.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
So a lot of people dream of that moment where you get to quit your regular job and content create or play video games full-time. But I think that it's so important to have an industry job for a little bit to learn a little bit about what you're doing.
I would agree.
And it's okay to like do that industry job, like maybe as a contractor or part-time, like 20 hours a week, and then do your stream on the side. Like you don't need to quit right away. But I think one thing that's so important with content creation is your mental health needs to be stable. Mm-hmm. And it can't be stable if you don't have any money.
That's right, yeah.
Like you're screwed.
This is an incredibly wise perspective from you, because I've known so many YouTubers and Twitch streamers that didn't have experience in other areas in the industry. And what that means is they have, not always, but they don't respect what an editor does. They don't respect what a producer does. And you can tell. And so they're really hard to work with because they do not respect those other roles. And then, since you and I have done those other roles, generally speaking, we try and respect the people around us that are also doing those things, because they're not easy. And they take a lot of effort.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things that I think if this is just really deep industry bullshit, but like if you've gotten into that and you are, you know, you're getting on by talent or somebody, whatever like that, then that's because they don't respect your role. And by the way, this is not me talking about G4 or whatever, because
we've had a lot of jobs. I've been shit on by talent before,
well,
like as
too.
A producer. And I'm like,
yeah.
Okay.
Now,
like,
I don't want anybody to be like, extrapolate this and be like, oh, that was Pereira. It's not. Pereira is still an amazing friend of mine. Olivia was the best. I have talked about Olivia for years because she was awesome.
We've had a long career, guys. Don't forget that.
Exactly. So there's a perspective there that you need, that you respect the other roles around you before you can ever get anywhere near the, like, I'm famous and hot.
Yeah. You know? Or like, you know, I think too, it's also understanding as content creators, we are marketers, producers, directors, talent, budgeters, all of this stuff. And so because I worked at like Defy, you know, a big company like that, I know when I'm putting on my accounting hat. I know when I'm putting on my producer hat. I know when I'm putting on my talent hat.
Right.
But sometimes when people haven't worked those types of jobs, they just turn on the camera and they're like, don't you love me?
Yeah,
and
like no.
This isn't like, you know. So I always encourage people to like work an industry job just for a little bit. Like understanding corporate, understanding production, understanding all of that is like so important before you go on your content creation journey.
It's true.
Because, dude, I don't know. I see a lot of TikTokers that get started there and then they get a million followers and then they don't know what they're doing. They sign up with a management team.
They
sign up with like a mass management team. And it's so exciting when you get that management email.
Yeah.
And then they say, so we'll be taking 50%.
Yeah, you're like, what? Yeah.
I had a friend ask me person the other day that she said they reached out and they said they're taking 30%. I was like, for what? Like,
because they're what? Are they getting the mad deals?
Yeah. No, and then no. I was like, well, first of all, in California, they can't operate as a manager and an agent together. And she was That's like, right. well, they're going to be a manager. They have, she's like, they have different sectors. It's manager, agent, and PR. And I was like, they can't take 30%.
They can't. You're right. Yeah.
They cannot. I guarantee you they're not doing 30% work. Like,
you're describing all that machinima. Holy hell.
Really?
Do you know anything about the machinima?
No.
Machinima, one of my favorite stories that I feel like people, again, if you know the industry stuff. Real quick.
I just looked at that. We're good.
Okay, we're good. All right, yeah. So the machinima thing was, machinima was very famously an MCN, right? A multi-channel network that did exactly what you're talking about. They preyed on people, content creators that were coming up, and they'd be like, oh yeah, we'll sign you on to our management and like you'll be part of machinima. Who knows what that meant? And then also we're going to take 60% of your rad revenue. And like, I know. And like, these are kids that are 19 years old and they're like, oh cool. Yeah. All right. I guess I'll be part of machinima or whatever. Very famously, there was a contract that they would have people sign that said, we have rights to your content in perpetuity. You remember? Yeah. In perpetuity, which is completely illegal and also means forever.
Yeah.
There's no such thing. There's no such thing as getting rights for whatever you're making forever.
In our world, if you get a contract that has the P word in the universe, in the world, it'll say within perpetuity in the universe, in the world, you send it back with a red line.
No, because that never works. And that, again, that's like a very famous, because once that was exposed online and people were like, they can't do this. They're just preying on young kids making content. In my opinion, beginning of the end for machinima. That's where like all of a sudden people are like, wait a minute, these people are just trying to steal.
Yeah.
They're not trying to help out
and just squeeze everything they can.
Bingo. Yeah.
I had a so one of my other jobs I worked too was I was a director of marketing at Live Nation. I say this all the time. I feel like I've said this like 40 times. Everyone's awesome. we get it, Bose.
but you're a director.
Yeah, we get it. So I was there for a bit, and at one point we had a meeting with this big talent agency. And I mean, like, when you think about it, if you're a content creator, getting signed by like one of the big three, like CAA or
big
like
deal,
WME, Gersh, UTA, all of those, you know, it's a huge deal. It's really exciting. And I had a couple of digital talent that I was doing touring for and trying to sell tickets for them. And a lot of times they would sell rooms that were like 500 capacity. Have you done live shows?
I have done a few live shows, yes.
Yeah. So like a 500 capacity room is pretty good.
That's a pretty sizable venue, honestly.
Yeah. Well, and once you start filling out those, God, live shows make a killing. Once you start filling out rooms that are 1,200 capacity, you're looking at like a $50,000 minimum guarantee on plus ticket sales.
Right.
So we were talking to one of these big talent agencies, and I asked the guy, I said, so, you know, as the talent agency, what are you guys doing to take your digital talent out of 500 person rooms and put them in 1,200 person rooms? Like, how are you growing them? How are you expanding them? And this fool straight up told me, he's like an older guy, clearly been in the industry for like 30 years, just dipping his foot into digital for a little cash, like real supervillain.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
So he sat there and like we're in a giant boardroom with like 25, 30 people. And he's like, we find that digital talent has a shelf life. So it's best to maximize where they're at now and do what we can for them. And I was like,
whoa.
And like, obviously this guy sees me as a marketer. So I also, at the time I was doing
both. You
were
making content, right? Yeah.
And it was interesting to see that the big man that we're so excited to be signed by sees us as having a shelf life.
Disposable.
Yes. Squeeze everything out of them and then throw them away.
Right. Because they're using you. They're not, don't care about, like, and that's, that's the interesting thing is that there are people out there that really do care, but that dude is just there to use people to make money for himself.
Yes. And then when they're done, they're done. And so, dude, like content creators, they have to, if you just build the whole team and then you just keep showing up every day and you're not doing the work to pivot, to create new art, to do anything, they will forget about you.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think also a lot of viewers, too, they've probably seen some of their favorite talent, like, kind of like fall off the path. And a lot of times it's not them. It's the talent gets caught up in a depression. The team's like, make more money, go do what you were doing before. Go do what you're doing before. They've lost their passion for it, but the team's like, we didn't make money doing that, so go do that.
That's right.
You've
yeah.
seen that.
No, you're right. Exactly right. And it's sad.
Yeah.
It's really sad because you're right. Like the like you said, like mental health is really important for somebody, especially somebody who makes content.
Yeah.
And they need to, you got to be right. Like it's making content when you're not right mentally. Is, yeah. really hard, number Dude. One. And number two, generally doesn't yield very good content.
Oh, it's terrible. So, yeah. I've been a little burnt out since January, and I've been trying to take little breaks. But
good for you.
I came from corporate, though. So to me, a three-day break is a break because that's all they give you in corporate.
Yeah.
But when you're content creating sometimes, because it's a lot of creative work and talking,
yeah.
sometimes you got to take like 2 weeks off.
Absolutely,
and
yes. Yeah.
Do you ever take long breaks?
Absolutely not. I never
I can't do it.
I can't because I was built for this. Like it's like weird. Because lots of people are like, Bruce, you stream every day. Because I do. I stream every day. Really? And they're always like, well, you know, like, why don't you take a vacation or whatever? I was like, number one, taking a vacation on Twitch, like, absolutely tanks everything you're doing there. But number two, I've worked way harder on a lot of other stuff.
Yeah.
Like when I was at G4, I was reminiscing about one day I worked 24 hours and didn't eat food.
Oh my God.
So I was like, I've had it worse, you know, like, and again, that wasn't bad. It's just that I already did.
Yeah.
And I was built to do that.
Yeah.
So for me, my breaks and my mental health are completely different than yours, completely different than another content creator's. Everyone's got their own threshold.
Right.
So you just have to tap into that, make sure you're good.
And
sure
understand
always,
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do take long breaks sometimes, but sometimes I try to like push through it. Like I'm in the middle of a mini little burnout right here.
Oh,
but
you gotta take it easy, dude.
Well, I'm going to Vegas in about 3 hours.
Oh, sick. What are you gonna, are you just going for fun?
My friend is in town and she's never been to Vegas before. She's been like my best friend for 20 years.
Never been.
And so, yeah, she's never been to Vegas.
Yeah,
so, yeah, I was like, I absolutely have
That's
to
great.
Take her. It's going to be a blast.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, and we've been friends forever. We're like sisters. So just the excitement of taking somebody for the first time. We're going to go see like Cirque du Soleil, which I love the circus, Bruce.
I didn't know that about you.
I love the circus. Okay, I'll tell you something else about me. I know we've been going like straight business for a minute.
Yeah, whatever.
Also, think of something you want to tell me because – person like a
Personally,
thing about you.
All right, I'll think about it. You go ahead. I want to talk about the circus first.
So I love clowns.
What?
I love
Nobody
clowns.
Loves clowns.
Because I see myself as a sad clown. I'm an entertainer, Bruce.
You're
an entertainer?
Most entertainers are sad clowns.
That's right. I'm simply a court jester. and I love it. So I really got into clowns for a while, and I started collecting all these sad clowns. Like I have these sad clown comics.
Okay.
I have like little figures and stuff like that. And I was so into it. And then I'm going to sound a little conspiracy here, but you guys know this is true. Like, I'll be talking about something through text, and then TikTok will start showing me.
Absolutely.
Okay, 100%. So I'm not crazy.
That's not
right?
conspiracy. That's your phone listens to you. That is absolutely not conspiracy.
So I was saying something about clowns, and I started getting clown stuff on my TikTok. And at first, I was like, okay. And then I realized it was all clown fetish stuff. Like, it was
Sick.
Like, dude,
Sick.
It was like, that's not what I want.
I mean, maybe you do.
I don't want that. I do not want that. And so I started seeing more of it, and like, but they were just doing weird stuff, and it took me a minute to realize like this is fetish content. Like you guys are.
Well, because clowns are generally, I think, either fetish content or people hate them, right?
Well, they were sexy clowns.
Yeah,
like,
but, I mean,
they were.
There's nobody like you. I've never met one person that's like, I love clowns.
Yeah,
like,
I love.
But not sexually.
Right.
Right.
I love a sad clown because it's me.
I get that.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
And so I'm not as into clowns as much as I used to be.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Although maybe you want to be into clowns. I don't know.
I do. I like it. I like them because, you know, to me.
Why don't you produce a show about clowns?
Nobody wants to see that.
That's true.
And
right.
also, I'm kind of over clowns now because I'm not into the sexy clowns. I don't want that.
Well, yeah, make a like a clown show for kids.
Yeah, people are very hit or miss on clowns, but I feel like The reason I connect with it is like I was, you know, I was a child performer. Okay.
Oh, okay. So I didn't know that about
you. Were you?
No, I started when I was like 18, 19. So
Oh yeah. No. I'm built for this.
What do you mean child performer? What'd you do?
I don't like to go into a lot of details.
Then don't
about
go
it,
into detail. Then.
But
don't,
ever since I was like five or so, never talked about this before. But yeah, ever since I was like five or so, and
so you were starting maybe that may have been because like. Was that something you didn't want to do? And like you were kind of like doing it because
it was kind of like go do this, you know? And so ever since I was a kid, like, you know, Christmas, like anything, it was da 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 da. Like
dance?
I
yeah,
was
yeah, yeah.
No, I just mean I you know, I feel like I've always been performing and that's what the clown is here to do.
It's true.
The clown is here to entertain you.
You're right.
And then they go home and they take off their makeup
and then
they
sit
stare
there
at
and,
the wall.
Yeah, and they stare at the mirror and they're very sad. Yeah.
And then they leave. And then get back up and they.
I mean, some days it really does feel like that.
Yeah.
Just generally creating content. But the thing that I always say whenever I get on Twitch, which is absolutely true, is I'm blessed to have maybe the greatest community in the entire world.
I get that.
And it's one of those things where, like, as soon as I turn that stream on, everything goes away. Like, it's just like, I'm having a blast.
Me too. Yeah. Me too.
I get my energy from that.
That literally just happened to me last night. I was having a rough day yesterday and I just did a random stream and I was like, I need you guys to do me a favor. I need like help. I need like a little.
And they got it. Pick. Right?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they my community's sick too. Yeah, like
that's the thing. So that's the sad clown thing makes total sense because throughout the day when you're not performing and you're not getting energy from audience or whatever, you truly are just kind of like. Like, it's just like a deep sigh.
Yeah.
Where you have to center yourself and, like, think about real life bullshit, you know, like stuff that sucks. And some days it really can get you down. It really can.
And
you know?
Actually, and sorry, not to, I'll end this one and I want to hear what you're, I need the Bruce secret. but not to get all, I don't know, overly sentimental, but. One thing is, too, as a sad clown of many, many years, I feel like I've always been performing for groups or entities that were like, yeah, you work for me now. Get out there and dance, basically.
Gotcha.
And that was my job. I'm an entertainer. But now I'm so blessed to be doing my own thing and building my own community.
Mm-hmm.
And now I feel like I'm singing and dancing for people that I actually like now.
Yes.
Which is new and really beautiful. And like you said, like, we're lucky to have what we have because.
Super blessed.
Yeah. When you were on other channels, you just they were kind of.
We're doing it for a company.
Exactly.
Whatever money we made, whatever feedback we got, I was always like, well, it's cool, but also all that goes to whatever.
Yeah.
Rooster Teeth, Warner Brothers. I mean, Comcast. You know, like it was all for people that, by the way, felt you were disposable.
Yes.
And that to me, I was like, they don't
very
even care
clown.
About this. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yes, you're right. Being independent and being on your own now, like. This is something I say often, and I'll say it again, directly supporting the creators that you like is so important, especially now that Rooster Teeth is gone. If you like a creator that worked at Rooster Teeth that's now getting laid off, go directly to them, support them with Twitch, YouTube, PayPal, whatever. That's how you do it. And I think that is becoming, I mean, it already is the future, but truly it's already happening.
Yeah.
But it is more and more the future of just directly supporting the person that you like.
I wonder if more independent creators are going to continue to be the downfall of these digital studios because for some reason it's not.
I'm fine with that if it's those people that think us disposable. So
yeah, that's true.
You know?
Give me a Bruce secret. Tell me something about you that I don't know.
You probably don't know this about me, but I love karaoke. And I love, like, I took voice lessons for years.
What?
And I played the drums for years. And I always, like, this is 20 years ago. I would form bands and, like, make these bands because I wanted this band to get popular and, like, tour and do, like, if any other universe, if a band had ever hit, I would be touring and, like, you know, writing music for hopefully the radio and shit like that. If it ever got even that far. Which is, by the way, very hard to do.
I love knowing what your alternate universe job would be.
Oh, I would love it. Like, it's like one of those things that, like, I'm way too old now to do that, but holy hell, that'd be so cool.
Mine would be like a cutthroat corporate executive. I'd have so much fun with that.
You would be the one that said the content creators were disposable?
No, I would be cutthroat somewhere, but probably no, because I understand the content creators are the hardest.
Oh, good. Okay.
Right, I understand good, that.
I want to make sure.
I'd actually probably be elevating them and the producers a lot more than anybody
slaughtering
else.
The people that.
Yeah. I'd be.
This is what you're saying is the way I've really tried to live my life, which is any system that I got inside, I knew that I was trying to change the system for, ideally, for good.
Don't even get me started on that, because it makes, I can't tell you how many times I've gone into a company and I'm like, wait, we should do things like this because this is the good way. And then there's somebody evil over here that just doesn't want it to happen. And then,
like, truly evil. Like, yeah. Really, honestly, like, there's a couple of people that I've met that I'm just like, these people are actually evil.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. And I mean, like, more like corporate, like, yeah. People you guys have never, ever heard of before.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And it's like, because you'd be shocked how, like, high up, like, Defy Media went and that's stuff right, like yeah. that. Like, I, some people, I was like, wow, you really don't care.
No.
And in the moment that you care and you realize that everyone else around you doesn't care, you're like, okay, like,
it's time for you to leave.
Do.
Yeah, no, well, that too, yeah. But like, that was the, those were the, what you're describing is those moments where I was like, I have to figure out how to leave now. And there were a couple times that that's what I did, but I like, you have to plan an exit strategy, the whole deal, right? You're already so deeply in the system that you got to figure out how to get out.
Yeah.
But that's when you realize that the majority of people don't care around you, but there's only a few people that really do care. It's either time to go or like burn it all down. And that's, yeah. I've never burned it all. That's not me generally. So.
Yeah, I'm not a burn it all down. And I'm also like, I'm sorry. I'm not the type of person that's going to rally up the people that do care and like, let's go change. Like, if I realize that the people at the top don't give a shit, then I'm like, okay, like, you don't want this, then I'm going to go somewhere where they do want it and where,
absolutely.
Like, I feel comfortable and safe. And
yeah, because those places exist.
Yeah, yeah.
they do.
Yeah. They really do. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, you got to eat and you end up at places where they don't.
That's right. You're right.
I think we're at a good time.
Yeah. Right. I don't know how long you normally go. But
no.
We can talk for
hours.
Dude,
I know, Bruce. I could have kept going. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I need you guys to go check out Bruce on Twitch because he's live every day.
Every single day, yeah.
Every day. What is your usual time slot?
Generally, I'm live in the afternoon. So 1 p.m. Pacific time. Or 8 p.m. Pacific time, or both.
Nice little.
Sometimes I do in the evenings. My wife and I just had a baby, so in the evenings I've been a little busy with recently.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, I'm either live 1 p.m. Pacific time or 8 p.m. Pacific time, or both.
I love to hear it. So, okay. Yeah. Well, we'll put the link in the description for YouTube, and if you guys are listening on Spotify and Apple, it will be all there. But Bruce, thank you for coming on. Thanks for being.
Anytime. I mean, you want me to come back? I'll come back.
We have to talk like not on camera sometime. It's been sick, like 5 years of us only communicating a lot in front of a camera.
It's true, and it's weird because I was just talking to my wife Autumn. I was just like, we've never spoken outside of content, but I know that if we sat down and talked, we would never stop.
I know. And it's so funny because I was watching your stream randomly reached out because I was like, I think I could talk to Bruce. I was like, I think it'd be good.
Yes, you definitely can.
Yeah. Yeah. So you guys are also seeing Bruce and I, like, this is the most we've interacted outside of the evil producers, like making us do stuff,
right.
You know,
you're right.
This is a pretty organic conversation, but yeah, you guys check out Bruce. Later.